Right, so this week is Parshat Pinchas. And one of the things we have in Pinchas is about dividing up the land of Israel. And if you look at the verses at the bottom of this page, verse 53, right at the bottom, La'ele, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, God spoke to Moshe saying, La'ele techalek ha'aretz, to these should be divided up the land, b'nachala in inheritance, b'mispar shemot, according to the number of their names. Now, the previous few pages in the previous section in the Torah has been going through the children of Israel, counting them and giving numbers. Like you can see some of the numbers over here. The, you know, 45,600, 64,400. You know, it's going through the numbers of the Jewish people according to their tribes. And so suddenly, after this whole list of counting the whole Jewish people, 600,000, 1,730, that's the totality of the number of men between 20 and 60, which means there were about 2 million people altogether, if you round it up with women and with children and with old people. But this number, then it says, La'ela kechalek ha'aretz, to these people the land should be divided in inheritance, but mispar shemot, by the number of their names, la'rav tarbe nachlato, according to the many, you should, if to the many, you should give a larger inheritance, v'lama'at, and to the few, tam'it nachlato, you should give a smaller inheritance. Ish lefi pekudav yutan nachalato. Each person, according to his numbers, should be given their inheritance of the land. Now, in other words, this suggests that you somehow rationally work out how many people there are in each tribe, and how many people in each family group, and according to that, you apportion the land to each tribe and to each family group. Now, this is what Rashi describes, that in fact the way in which they apportioned the land was according to the number of people who were now alive in each tribe. It happens that Nachmanides, Ramban, disagrees with Rashi. Ramban says each tribe got the same amount. However, he also agrees that it's quite possible that it may well mean that within the tribe you apportion it per family according to the size of the family. So there's some way in which this concept of apportioning the land according to numbers. Okay. So there's some way that so there are different ways in which one can understand it, but basically it means that there is a kind of a rational division of the land according to numbers of people. Rashi adds, you also have to take into account the quality of the land. You know, it's not just so many people per square something. You know, you have to consider, is it hilly land, is it stony, and so on. So some kind of rational aspect in the division of the land. Then it says, next verse, verse 55, Ach bagoral yechalek haaretz, but the land should be divided by lots, by drawing lots. Lishmot matot abotam yinchalu, according to the names of the tribes of their ancestors, they should inherit it. Al pi hagoral techalek nachlato, according to the lot, the land should be divided, bein rav lema'at, whether many or few. Okay, so these seem like slightly contradictory verses, because if you're dividing by lots, then that seems a different principle to dividing by size. And the way that Rashi presents it is in a rather sort of mystical, you know, miraculous way. That first of all, they somehow worked out what all the different portions of land would be for each tribe. And in that, if we follow Rashi's view, you know, so they said, well, tribe A has got many people, so that's a big piece of land, and tribe B is smaller, so it's a smaller piece of land. So somehow or other they worked all that out, and they've now got 12 tribes and 12 plots of land. Whether they drew them as maps or how they defined them, I don't know. But some kind of definition of these 12 lots of land. Then you have two further processes, according to Rashi. One is that you have the high priest, and he says, if such and such a tribe is chosen, then such and such a portion of land will rise up with him. That's one thing that he says. And the other thing that happens is they've got like two boxes. One has all the names of the tribes, one has all the names of the plots of land. So they put in their hand and they take out the tribe. Ah, it's Shevet Shimon, the tribe of Shimon. They put in their hand and they take out from the other box. Ah, there it is. It's the piece of land which is the right piece of land for Shimon, which is the right size. So it's some kind of intriguing, you know, like the way in which Rashi describes them. It's a kind of combination of rationality and mystical processes of drawing lots. You know, you have the idea of drawing lots quite a lot in the excuse the pun, many times in the Torah. You have drawing lots. For example, on Yom Kippur, when there are two goats which are going to be offered up in the temple, one is going to, the blood is going to be sprinkled in the innermost holy of holies in the temple, and the other one is going to be taken to a rocky escarpment outside Jerusalem and thrown down. So they have two identical looking goats, and then the high priest draws lots in order to decide which goat is going to go Sire. One goat is Lahashem, for God, so to speak, and the other one, Lazazel, is going to be taking everyone's sins in a kind of and is going to carry them away. So which goat is which? It's decided by lots in the book of Jonah.
That's an interesting question. Anyway, why did they need to choose the goats by lot? Why couldn't the high priest say, all right, I fancy this one to be chucked over and that one to be sacrificed?
Well, that's precisely the thing. By saying that it's lots, it's like making it a divine choice. So it's a divine choice. The point about the lot is that it's seen as a divine thing. Who gets who gets the short straw? It's you know, that's seen as allowing a complete tzugism, allowing a complete like divine intervention. You could say God is going to intervene anyway, whatever we do, but it's like a mechanism for allowing God to express Himself, as it were. So in the book of Jonah, they drew lots to see, the sailors drew lots to see whose fault was the storm, and it landed on Jonah. It was Jonah's fault. And so this concept of drawing lots. So that's what the discourse is going to start off with, and it's going to link this to the individual. To the individual Jew, with different aspects of our soul. And sort of there are lower, more rational aspects, higher, more exalted dimensions, and yet higher. You know, so you have the different concept of the lot, which is the organizing something in a rational way, and then you have the drawing of a lot, And you have the divine spirit as well, Ruach HaKodesh, which is the spirit of prophecy. So these sort of operate within our own being. And so what this text is about is the way in which this rather mystical way of dividing up the land with a combination of mysticism and rationalism also relates to the individual in his or her involvement with the divine, and that we have these different dimensions inside us as well. So that is the introductory verse. We do have another section with verses from 2 weeks ago, the Sedra, which we may look at later. But at the minute, at this moment, we're going to look at the discourse, and we generally begin with a melody in order to help the concepts in the discourse, which really are very spiritual concepts, slip into the doorways of our mind and heart. Oh, ya 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 yo ya yo ya ya ra ya ra yo ma mo ya ma ya ma ya 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 ra ho ya ma ho ya ma mo aho ya ya ra ma ya ya yo. Hi, yere lamba, yamba, yom. Hi, yere lamba, yere lamba, yom. Hi, ya, yamba, yere lamba, yamba, yamba, yere lamba. Ho, yamba, ho, yamba, boom. Okay, ach, bagoral. Now let's have a look at the actual text on page Sadik Dalad. So we go on to the pages where it's just inscrutable Hebrew. However, it will all be translated with the help of God. Or the bits that we're going to do will be translated, because we only do a bit of it. Have you got that? It's in it. Right. Ach bagoral yechalek et haaretz. But by drawing lots, the land should be divided. Incidentally, this was a very interesting discourse. I remember when this discourse was first published. It was published in 1975. So that's 35 years ago. And it was published immediately after the Rebbe said the discourse. The Rebbe said the discourse, it was on a Wednesday. You see that? Dalad Parshat Pinchas. It was on Wednesday of Parshat Pinchas, 35 years ago. That's when it was said. And very quickly it was typed up and the Rebbe edited it, which was a very, very unusual thing in those years. For the Rebbe to edit a discourse. He edited his talks, his Sichot, which eventually became 39 volumes of Likutei Sichot. But for him to edit a discourse was very, very rare. And people were very excited about that. And in those days, we didn't even have fax machines, 1975. And there was someone passing through from America to Israel. And they came through London Airport, and someone went to meet them at the airport, and they got a copy of the discourse. Then they brought it to Lubavitch House in North London, and then there were, in those days, there was a printing press there. And within a few hours, the discourse was printed, and people were studying it. It was a very exciting event, studying this discourse. So, and it somehow spoke to me in a very profound way, because it's talking about the way the different dimensions of a person's relationship with the divine, you know, there's sort of rational dimensions and super rational dimensions. and the way in which those link together. And there's another interplay which takes place here with some verses from the Song of Songs. The whole idea of a mayan, a wellspring, or mayim chayim, living water. There's a whole imagery about water. It could be a most beautiful graphic thing with different aspects of water, and the way in which the water goes through the gidei haaretz, the channels in the earth, and is purified through that, which is almost like life, in which we go through different struggles and different problems, you know, and in that way the water of our being is purified and on a higher level. So there are all different levels of imagery which are here in this discourse. And then, of course, also relating to the land of Israel and the sanctity of the land of Israel. So the land of Israel should be divided by lots. Chalukat Arzenu HaKadosha, the division of the sacred land, the holy land. Shekavshu et Eretz Kanaan, that they conquered the land of Canaan. Va'asu ota Eretz Yisrael, and they made it into the land of Israel. Now that's an amazing thing. That step of taking something which is the land of Canaan, the land of Canaan, an idolatrous land, but it's really the land which was given to Abraham. And then taking that land and transforming it into the sacred land of Israel. Va'ad sh'od biyot b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, so much so that even while the Israelites, the Jewish people, were still in the desert before they came to Israel, Ne'emar aleha, it says about the land of Israel, Eretz asher einei Hashem elokecha ba, the eyes of God are on the land, Mereshit HaShana Vad Achrit Shana, from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. In other words, even before they were inhabiting this land is a holy land. It's got a special relationship with God. So here, in our Sedra, Mavaya, it explains, Asher Chalukot Arzenu HaKadosha Haita Al Pi Agoral. The division of the Holy Land took place through drawing lots. And then further, as well as what it says in the text, there is also said further, Al Pi Hashem, according to the mouth of God. So it says, Al Pi Hashem, and then it says, by the mouth of God. Now what does that mean? The mouth of God, you see in footnote 4, is not a verse in our Sedra. Where is it? Footnote 4?
The what? I didn't hear it. I'm reading the notes.
Well, no, when we take out the Torah.
No, well, when it says Al Pi Hashem, by the mouth of God, that the division of the land was by the mouth of God, it says that in the book of Joshua. So the book of Joshua in the Bible is where they actually did divide up the land. So he's talking about the way they divide up the land. He uses the word there in the book of Joshua, by the mouth of God, which is explained to mean by Ruach HaKodesh, by the Holy Spirit. So you have drawing lots, and you have the Holy Spirit as well. Umafarish Rashi, and Rashi explains that means by Ruach HaKodesh, that means with the Holy Spirit. The spirit of prophecy. Ve'od inyan haya b'chalukat ha'aretz, and there was another thing involved with the portioning of the land, la'ravta ben achlato v'lama'ata mitnachlato, that you give a lot to the more numerous group and less to the smaller group. Shehu inyan al pi seichel, and that is something which is happening according to human intellect. So there we have this mixture of human intellect and mystical, trans-rational processes. So you have a number of different processes taking place, and they are happening together and somehow coming together in the division of the land, and that is really what happens in the life of every person all the time, that you have a mixture of these different processes operating at the same time within the life of the individual. Now, we'll skip the rest of this paragraph, which goes into a discussion of the difference between what Rashi says and what Ramban says. But we'll skip that for the moment, and we'll go on to paragraph 2. Perek Bey. V'hine ha'inyan d'chalukat ha'aretz. The idea of dividing up the land, al pigoral, according to drawing lots, is explained by Kvod Kedushat Admor HaTzemach Tzedek. The third Lubavitcher Rebbe was called Rabbi Benachem Mendel HaTzemach Tzedek. He lived around 1850. And he explained this idea in a discourse which he said, or wrote, Meyusad Al-Maima, based on a discourse of the first Chabad Rebbe, and they quote something quite surprising, which is in the Talmud. The Talmud says, Sha'ama Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That's the abbreviation, Reshit Bezai. Everyone would know this.
Yeah.
It's, you know, included. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said a rather striking statement. It's in Brachot. Eini yodea be'eza derech molichim oti. I don't know which way I will be led. In other words, when he leaves the world after 120 years, he doesn't know where he's going. So, of course, there are many jokes about where people go when they leave the world. You know, do you want to be in a friendly environment? But there is this Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in the Talmud, a great sage, who is saying he doesn't know which way he's going to be led. Well, will he be led to the Garden of Eden or some negative place? D'lochora tamur, this seems surprising. Vahari Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it says elsewhere in the Talmud, lo halach daled amot belo Torah ubelo tefillin. He never went 4 cubits without holding a Torah scroll in his arm and without wearing tefillin. So you would assume that this expresses a deep dedication to Torah and the values of Torah. Yeah, it's an external thing, wearing tefillin and carrying a Torah scroll, but it seems to be a signifier of the person's deep dedication. O shmonim shana lamad v'limed Torah, and another piece of evidence, which it says somewhere, a third place in the Talmud, that for 80 years he studied Torah and he taught Torah. Well, you would think, you know, in spiritual terms, he's got it made. You know, not only that, he's a famous figure in the Talmud. Umma makom lesafek. Why is there room for doubt? Be'ezo derech malichin oto. Which way he will be led. It's an intriguing concept. You know, on the one hand, you might say it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's humility. It's his humility. He doesn't... You see, one thing about these great scholars and teachers, they can say, well, listen, you know, that's what I like doing. I like learning Torah and I like teaching Torah. I can't say that it's a good thing on my part. That I was given those talents, so I used them. Maybe he felt he didn't use those talents enough. You see, that's you could have a very great person who feels bad that he didn't use the talents enough, and it's like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses is described in the Torah as the most humble person in the world. So how can he be most humble? Surely he's the person God spoke to face. God gave the Torah to him. He's got this special relationship to God. So Moshe can answer, well, you know what? If someone else would have been put in the same position as me and given that same relationship with God, they might have done much better than me. So, you know, there's still room for humility, even if a person is of an exceptionally great stature. And that's really, you could answer it that way about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as well. That, like all great men, he was also very humble as well. However, the Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, the first Chabad Rebbe back in the 18th century or early 19th century, he explains that there are aspects of the soul that you can sort of control in a very straightforward way. You know, those are the lower aspects of the soul. You can deal with those. You know where they are. You know what they're doing. This is focused here and that is focused there. You know, everything might be in place. That's for very, you know, remarkable people. Most individuals, their soul is highly scattered, and we're not at all sure where anything is, and we're just completely confused. However, you can imagine a great tzaddik, he is absolutely in control of most dimensions of his soul. However, there's another level of the soul. There's etzem ha-nefesh. There is the essence of the soul. Haynu mitzad chinat ha-nefesh sholemayla mitam badat. There's a level of the soul which is higher than reason. The level of the soul which is within reason, that means it's controllable by reason.
Tam
v'dat, yes. Tam v'dat signifies, tam is reason, like taste, and dat is knowledge. Mm-hmm. So tam v'dat means rationality. It's a phrase that means rationality. So l'mala mitam v'dat, higher than, is the irrational dimension. So there is a level of the soul which is on the irrational dimension, which is a supra-rational dedication to the divine. And the question is, a person might, on the outer levels of their spiritual self, we're talking about the spiritual self, the outer levels, to everything might be very well organized and everything totally appropriate according to Torah mitzvah, but the level which is beyond reason, there is still a question mark about that. Where is that focused? That's interesting, because on a much more conventional level of human behavior, you know, not talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but very often there are things that we feel we're in control of, and there are things we feel we're not in control of. And those dimensions that we're not in control of, you know, let's say a person might have an obsession about something, or a fear, they've got a phobia. Or, it doesn't have to be clinical, you know, just within the context of life, you know, there are things they can deal with and things they feel they cannot deal with, which are beyond their control. And the question is, there are things beyond our control, sometimes there are things beyond our consciousness, where we are motivated by processes sometimes that we're not fully aware of and which aren't quite within our reach. You know, and sometimes a person realizes with a shock something or other about themselves. And so the question is, you know, whether, you know, I don't know if that's exactly comparable, but it's parable. It's parallel. It's a parallel dimension. You know, that they're the areas that we feel I can say yes or I can say no. And then there are levels beyond where we are not actually in control and we don't actually know, we're not able to plot it all, you know, and that's on a sort of very mundane level. And then we have this operating, the same structure operating in the life of a great tzaddik like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, where there are areas he can control, and then there's areas beyond, which are beyond his control. You might have the same structure repeated like higher and higher and higher on different levels. Alright, so that's Hainu mitzad b'chinat ha-nefesh shalamayla mitam b'dam. That's the aspect of the soul beyond reason. Okay, let's take the next page. V'lechein amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Eini yodeh, I do not know. Even though he studied Torah, he did all these good things. Because the fact that he studied such a lot of Torah, that's something relating to rationality. That doesn't prove anything about what is higher than rationality. Now, if we haven't got any control over this level of rationality, of beyond rationality, what's he worrying about? Why should he be bothered about it? It's like, you know, we've got no control over what color our eyes are. Some people have brown eyes, some have blue, some green. We do not expect that we're going to be judged by the heavenly court because someone's got brown eyes and not green eyes. That's how we're made. It's nothing to do with me. I've got no control over it. If there was a mitzvah to have brown eyes, then we would have surely had to have the means of controlling so that we could make ourselves have brown eyes. And if not, you can't say it's a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah to have brown eyes. It's not a mitzvah to be 8 feet tall or 6 feet tall. Whatever size a person is, that's how big they are. It's a mitzvah to be healthy. But that doesn't mean... Hi, Akiva, how are you? Yeah, we're just coming up to Os Gimel. Just before Os Gimel. So then comes the point which is made in the second line over here. V'hine gam b'chinazu. Now also this level which is beyond rationality. Mikeven sheyesh b'zeh ainyan deschava onesh. Since there is the idea of reward and punishment, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is worrying about it. Muchach mizeh, that proves sheyesh efsharut, that there is a power, a possibility. V'yocholet, there is the ability, urshut, and the permission, l'chol odam natuna, given to every single person, gam b'nogeh lebechina zu shebenefesh, also relating to this aspect of the soul. In other words, we can all somehow reach that level which is beyond reason, and we somehow or other have the power to affect that or influence that in some way. And this is why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is concerned. He's wondering, did I really do this to the full extent? Even though it's not a straightforward thing. You know, you get up in the morning and you're going to spend the whole day studying Torah, praying and studying Torah. Okay, well, you can make yourself do that. But how do you make the essence of the soul bond with God in the way that it's being described here? Well, maybe there are methods to do that as well.
But he didn't know them.
Well, you see, that comes down also, even when you've had this explanation, you can then say it's humility, where he's saying, he's claiming that he doesn't know them. It's still an expression of his humility. So you end up with the humility of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
It's different. He says, "Ini yodei be'eretz derech molichinoti," not "Ini yodei mash," if what I did is the right thing in order to go in the right way.
Well, he's saying, "What is the effect of what I did?"
Yeah, he's not saying that I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, in other words, he's saying, I don't
what
know if
not,
I utilize...
What he did is nothing to do with his irrational level. He did only things to do with his rational levels.
Well, no, I think that the way the discourse approaches it, we do things relating to the irrational level as well. But it's a different kind of thing. It's some kind of extra level of dedication or of emunah, of faith, or bitul, or of selflessness. You might have two people apparently doing the same thing. The video camera will show them both doing the same thing. But one is doing it with an extra dimension, which means that the essence of the soul is involved, and the other one, not so much. And you can't tell in the ordinary situation. You can't. You may not be able to tell in some. In this discourse, it doesn't take this example, but the example which is very often found in Chabad Hasidic thought is Mesirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice for some aspect of Jewish teaching. So you can have two people who are behaving in exactly the way, the same very, very spiritual way, and then there's suddenly some immense threat. And one of them stands up to that threat and refuses to succumb, and the other one isn't able to do that in the same way. It's so there's mesirut nefesh, there's self-sacrifice for Jewish teaching or for Kiddush Hashem, for the sanctification of the divine name, and that is a level which is beyond ta'am v'dat, beyond rationality. So that's a kind of example. This discourse does not focus on self-sacrifice in that way, but there are many discourses which do that higher level of the soul. Now, so if we look at the last 1.5 lines of this paragraph. Now this aspect of the soul and the avodah hashayechet lebchina zu, the service which relates to this aspect of the soul, nikhet b'shem goral, that's called the lot. That's what it means. Va'al pizeh mevaya tzemach tzedek, and through this the tzemach tzedek, the third Chabad Rebbe in 1850, he explains ha'inyan d'chalukat ha'aretz sh'al pi goral. He explains what it means dividing up the land of Israel by lots. It means that the lot, the goral, the level of lot which is in the soul, that level which is beyond reason, also comes into play in the person's life. You see, when dividing up the land of Israel, it says ach b'goral, b'goral yechalak et ha'aretz, the land should be divided by lots, and also l'rav tarbe nachalato, and also you give much land to a larger group and a smaller amount of land to a smaller group. And there's an argument between Rashi and Ramban about exactly how that's understood, but for both of them there's some sort of rational dimension. Gimel ubiya shaychut shel shloshet hadvarim, now explaining these three concepts, these three aspects, hagoral benefesh, the goral in the soul, the lot, the drawing of lots in the soul, uba avadat ha'adam, and in the service of the individual, uba chalukat ha'aret, and in the division of the land. So you've got the concept of goral, of drawing lots, this super rational dimension, and we've got three elements: the soul, the individual serving God, and the division of the land of Israel. Now there's a beautiful little statement here. Hine kol hadvarim shebe'olam, everything that there is in the world, yeshnam beYisrael, are there in the Jewish people. And there's a verse from Kohelet, gam et ha'olam natam belibam, also the world has been put in their hearts. So inside each person's heart, there is everything. Everything is there. This is the ultimate in terms of, you know, everything being interlinked and a hyperlink to everything. You know, that there inside one individual, there is everything. Ubifrat, and especially, hachelek sheb'olam ha'shayich bifrat liYisrael, that portion of the world. If we're saying that everything in the world is within each individual, that's wonderful. Then that portion of the world, Hashayach Befrat Yisrael, the land which especially relates to the Jewish people, which is the land of Israel. And he quotes from a saying of the sages that when God created the world, he divided up the lands, and he chose the land of Israel. And then he divided up the peoples, and he chose the Jewish people. And the Midrash says, let the Jewish people, who are God's portion, come and take inheritance of that land, which is also God's portion. Therefore, God gave the land of Canaan to Abraham, our ancestor, to him and his children after him, to be an eternal possession. Now, so since we have this concept that everything that there is in the land of Israel is also there within the individual, as an individual Jew, and which relates in a sense to every person. So also on another level, those things which are in each individual Jew, they correspond to the things in the land of Israel. So there's a correspondence both ways. And since concerning the land of Israel, in conquering the land of Canaan to make it the land of Israel, there were these three concepts of the Goral, the lot, Ruach HaKodesh, prophecy, and Seichel, which is intellect, rationality. So we understand that these three things are therefore in each individual Jew as well, in the Ruchniut, in the spirituality of each individual, there is also there. And even the concept of the rational dimension that we would normally see as pertaining particularly to the body also relates to some extent to the spiritual as well. And since the goal of the Jewish people is in order to serve God, so therefore all these three things are also there in service of God. So that means the land of Israel has these different divisions, the Jewish people in their souls have these different divisions, and in service of God we have these different divisions as well. Okay, Dalit. Vainyan hu. One second. Okay, so we have these three levels operating within the land of Israel, the Jewish people, and our individual service of the divine. Vainyan hu. Now the subject is as follows. It's explained in the discourses of Yud Beis and Yud Gimel Tammuz, which we've just come from, that in the Jewish people there are three levels. And here we launch into a phraseology which comes from Song of Songs. Now Song of Songs is in a way the most spiritual of the books of Tanakh. And there in Song of Songs it talks about Mayan Ganim, the fountain of the gardens. And there is Be'er Mayim Chaim, there is the well of living water. And then there is another level, Nozlim Min Lavanon, flowing down from the Lebanon. Now the Lebanon here doesn't mean the country, the Lebanon, north of Israel. It means Lev Nun, Lamed Bet, which is 32 parts of wisdom, and Nun Sha'arei Binah, the 50 gates of understanding. So we have these different, let's try and put these on the map, if you like. So, so we've got the fountain of the gardens. That's Mayam Ganim. And then we've got living water, which is a higher level. And then we've got this flow from Lev Nun, from the 32 paths of wisdom and the 50 gates of understanding. So there's a flow from a more exalted level. So these are three different aspects within the soul of the person. This is a kind of exploration of the anatomy of the soul. And we're trying to explore these different spiritual dimensions and the way in which they relate to our rationality, our super-rationality. You know, we are sort of exploring this areas of consciousness and of being which very often are just not thought of at all. But here we are trying to explore that more closely. Now, Now, this nozlim, this flow, the word for flow is nozel. And nozel comes from the word mazal. Now, mazal, we normally translate as luck. But the idea of mazal, well, mazal is something higher than rationality. And that is like the goral. That's like the drawing lots. The mazal is something which is equivalent to drawing lots. So let's just put that in the picture as well. Mazal is luck, and that's like drawing lots. That's goral. Goral, right? V'nidbar bezeh, second line from the end. It's explained here, Shamayan Ganim, that the lowest level, the fountain of the gardens, which is still very beautiful. In fact, the fountain of the gardens is really a potential dimension. It's the souls before they've actually come into the world. That's the fountain of the gardens. Then they are called the daughters of Jerusalem. Now in the Song of Songs, there's all the time an interplay speaking to the daughters of Jerusalem. So those are the souls before they come into the world. Over the page, Jerusalem indicates, the word Jerusalem indicates the wholeness of awe of God. And that's what the word Yerushalayim is. Yira, fear, and shalem, whole. The wholeness of fear. And that's why the way we generally write the word Yerushalayim, we don't write lamed yud mem. We always write it lamed mem. And there's a patach and a chirik, but it's never written with a yud. Why not? In traditional sources. Modern, I don't know, I get buff, maybe that. But in the traditional sources, because it wants this word shalem, shalem meaning whole, so it's the wholeness of Yira.
Even the person that wrote the mamar writes yud after the.
He mamar. Wrote a yud. Yeah.
So like the Eged Bas.
Nachon, probably the same guy.
In his spare time.
And therefore the souls as they are above, and they're called the daughters of Jerusalem, because then they are at a state of wholeness. But then we come to the living water, the well of living water. So this living water is a well. Now this, you see, it's interesting. I've put at the bottom of the picture the soul before it comes into the world. You would think that the soul should be, before it comes into the world, should be on a higher level. But it's the avodah, it's the service that the soul comes into the world and has the struggles of being in the world that gives the soul something more than it had before it came into the world. So there are various teachings by the sages and in the Talmud and the Midrash that the souls, before they come into the world, you remember where they are? Where are the souls said to be before they come into the world? Do you remember? They're under the throne of glory of Hashem. That's how they're described.
Why does it say Limala here? Aneshamot kimo shem lemala nikraot b'shem bnot Yerushalayim.
Yeah, that means lemala means before they come into the world.
Ah.
Yeah.
And then they come to the bottom.
Well, the point is that's like a potential state. The fact that they then come into the world and they reach the level of the well of living water is a higher level of spirituality. The soul as it is here is really in some sense is something more profound and is achieving something more profound than when it's just a fountain of the gardens, which is a very comfortable situation. Because it's here in this world that it's facing the paradoxes and the difficulties of this world. And that's why it's a well of living water. Because the well of living water is where the water is going through the Gidei HaAdamah. It's going through the channels of the earth, and that's purifying it. That's bringing out something extra which it didn't have before. Let's see the way in which this is expressed. So the third line down. Ube'er ma'im chayim kayal anashamot, the words, the well of living water, that refers to the souls, kumoshi yadu lamata, as they've come down below, umelubashot begufim gashmim, and now they're enclosed in physical bodies. Bedugmat ha-be'er shenimtza be'omek ha'aretz, like a well which is in the depths of the earth. Omnam yarida zui tzorech aliyah. In fact, this descent is for the sake of rising. Shal yedei avodat ha-neshama lamata, because it's through the service of the soul below, dafka, through that, hi mitalet bevchinat na'alit yoter. It rises to a much higher level, mikamo sha'ayta kodem yaridata, than it was on before it descended. V'zeu shchora ni v'na'ava b'not Yerushalayim. That's why it says in the Song of Songs, I am dark and comely. I am black and beautiful. And the darkness, the darkness of the skin is understood as the sun burning on the skin and making the person sunburn because of being in the struggles of existence. Because of being in the struggles of existence, that makes the person dark, so to speak. But that darkness is beautiful. More beautiful than being in this ethereal realm of the fountain of the gardens. Shahanashamot sheyadu lamata litlabesh beguf nefesh ha-ba'amid, the souls which descended below to be enclosed in a body and an animal soul, Omrot la'neshamot shelamayla, they say to the souls above, who are called the daughters of Jerusalem, Hagam sheshchorani, even though I'm dark through the suntan and being in the struggle of this life, ki al yedei yeridata l'olam hazeh atachton she'ein tachton lamatal mimeno, because through coming down into this low world, that there's no world lower than this, as regards the concealment of God's radiance, and that's why we become dark, which is the head, the ha'or legamrei, the concealment of radiance. Mikol makom, nonetheless, al yedei sheshchora ani, through my darkness, ani davka al yedei zeh v'nava. Specifically through that, I'm really beautiful. Shehi mitalet yoter mikamo sheita lemala v'yotab nikhet benot Yerushalayim. She rises up higher than when she was called the daughters of Jerusalem. So I think this was one of the things that had such meaning to me when I first learned this discourse 35 years ago, when this discourse was said and it was immediately published, and with great excitement people were reading it, because it is that expression of the struggle of life adds some deep dimension to the spirituality of each individual. And we sometimes think of holiness as being, you know, pure, beyond the world, you know, restricted from the world. You know, the fountain of the garden sounds so appropriate. You know, you imagine this beautiful garden, and no one ever trespasses into that garden. This garden is an incredibly pure and safe place, you know, and this is where the souls are there. You couldn't imagine anything better than that. But that's not the highest. The highest thing, or higher than that, is to come down into this world full of its paradoxes and dangers and problems and negative things, and in this world to face the struggles of life. And that's what raises a person to the well of living water. Right, so that is this step of going higher, and the going higher comes through facing the negativity, and here the kumosha habe'er, that's at the end of the line, like the well, al yidei shemeimov ovrim et gidei ha'adama, through the fact that the water of the well passes through the channels of the earth, ha'malimim u'mastirim al ha'mayim, which hide, which conceal the water, nonetheless na'aseh bahem zikuch, they are purified, the waters are purified, ad she'na'asim mayim chayim, and they become something very special, which halachically is even more than a mayan, than a fountain, and it relates to the laws of mikvaot, because the mayim chayim, the living water, that is what's used for the ashes of the parah aduma, of the red heifer, which purifies higher levels of impurity than a mere mayan, a fountain, is able to do, even though a mayan is also very exalted. So, if we go al derech zeh, that's pretty well the middle of this paragraph. Al derech zeh, in the same way, hu gam benogeh la neshama, so too, as regards the soul, she'al yedei yiridata lemata, through the soul descending below, v'hitlapshuta beguf, and the soul being enclosed in the body, which is a terrible disturbance for the soul. The soul doesn't want to have to be involved with things that the body is interested in. And nonetheless, the soul is trapped there in the body, and the nefesh ha-bahamit, and the animal soul. And so there, the soul, the divine soul, is trapped in that situation. Hama'alimim u'mastirim alo ha-neshama. And the body and the animal soul conceal the radiance of the neshama. She'imit galet ma'kitzur v'hester. And the way in which the soul is revealed from this concealment is al yedei ha'avoda dechafrua sarim karua nedivei ha'am. The princes dig it. The leaders of the people channel this water from the well. She'inyan ha'chafira v'akhiya, the idea of this digging, hu ha'sarat ha'helem v'hester shel ha'guf v'nefesh ha'bahamit. It's removing the concealment of the body and animal soul, hamalimim umastirim alo neshama, which hides the radiance of the soul, of the neshama. So that's a very interesting image. You have to dig, in order to find a well, you have to dig down in the earth. And you dig down, 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 finally you come to water, and that's the water of the well. That's the be'er mayim chayim, that's the well of living water. So the earth that you're digging through, and the rocks, that's like the body, or the animal soul. That's what conceals the living water of the neshama. So there is this process of digging down through the body and the animal soul until you come to this beautiful water which is within. Now, what is this in Avodah? Right? So we are 4, 8 lines up from the bottom of this paragraph, Dalet. Sheba avodah, in service of God, zu shnei inyanim. This actually represents two different ideas. Aleph inyan itponunut, the way in which we get through the earth and uncover the water is through contemplation. Contemplation. Contemplation is the method that we can use in order to break through the barriers of our own physicality and reach the spiritual dimension within. So that's the quality of the first way that we dig down in order to find the well. So we're trying to dig in order to find the inner water, and we're digging into ourselves. And one of the techniques for digging into ourselves is hidbonanut, contemplation. And secondly,
why does it say Nikra Sharim?
Sarim.
Sarim from the Sarim.
Now that's the other verses that we have. You see, that's from 2 weeks ago, the Sedra Chukat. Let's just see that, since we've come here. If you want to turn to, in the Torah, it's got page 773, Chukat. Az Yashir Yisrael et Hashira Zot, then the Jewish people sang this song, Ali Ve'er Enula, rise up well, answer me. There, the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Rise up well, answer me. This is a song they sang about the well of Miriam. Be'er, now in the next verse, Be'er Chafaru Asarim, the well which was dug by princes. Karua Nedivei Am, it was uncovered through the Nedivei Ha'am, the generous of the people. B'mechokek b'mishanotam, engraving with their staves. And then, umimidbar matana, from midbar they went to matana, and from matana they went to nachaliel, and from nachaliel they went to bamot. Okay, so that's how it continues. So there's this little snatch of this song about the well. And so there's a reference, there's another reference to that here as well. So we have these images from Song of Songs, and this image from Chukat. And so one aspect, in order to get to the within one in this way, is the one way to get there is through Hitbonanut. And the second way, that's right. The second way, Hasheni Beit Inyan Amidot Shebelev, the emotions or the good attributes in the heart, the generosity, Hanikret Nedivei Am, which is called the generous of the people. Now the Midot in the heart is Chesed and Gvura, the love in an appropriate way for the right things. Gvura means severity, withdrawing in an appropriate way from the things it's right to withdraw from. Sha'al yadam ba, and it's through those midot, through those emotive responses, it's like training oneself or revealing within oneself a certain emotional response which is able to help one achieve sumera va'asei tov bepoel, that one should keep away from bad and actually do good in practical action. Now very often we are dependent on the emotions in our heart, because there comes up some kind of opportunity, and it might seem an attractive, a positive opportunity, and suddenly the heart says, no, it's not right, don't do it, you know. And you say, you know, I'm not so sure. All kinds of, now these emotions in the heart, if they have been tuned, and it's just right being in this home to talk about the tuning of the strings of the heart. If the strings of the heart are tuned in a good way, then the person is going to have a certain, what's called in Hasidic language, chush hareach, a sense of smell. Now, when you're cooking, you take something out of the fridge, and you're not so sure how long has it been in the fridge. Is it still fresh? You smell it. No, I don't think it's good. Let's throw it away. I'm not going to use it. So in moral and spiritual terms, we need a good sense of smell that a person is able to sense in a situation or an opportunity, this is not right. And he or she withdraws, steps back. So those are what it's calling here, Nedivei Ha'am, the generous of the people. Those are the midot of the heart. And it's through those that a person comes to keep away from bad when it's something we shouldn't be doing. Or on the other hand, the opposite, va'aseh tov. There are good things that we should be doing. And some kind of suggestion is made. Yes, yes, let's do that. That's a wonderful thing. And you go for that and you put your heart into it. Hinei al yedei zeh dafka. It's through this, through going through these different processes, whether he'd bonanut or the emotions of the heart, al yedei zeh dafka mitalet haneshama lemaila, the soul ascends higher, yoter, higher mikamosha ita kodim yiridata, than it was before it descended into this world. Shenasim bechinat mayim chayim, and the soul becomes with the quality of living water, which is higher than the fountain of the gardens. You see, and that's why, although the fountain of the gardens is in heaven, and this well of living water is on earth, the heaven, the heavenly dimension is at a lower level than, and this, I think this was one of the elements about this discourse. The affirmation, the tremendous affirmation of the positive dimension of being here in this world and everything that it means and facing the struggle of this world. Because in Kabbalistic teaching, in spiritual teaching, there are really two directions. One direction is away from reality into some kind of spiritual height and trying to reach that spiritual height and letting the realities of the world disappear into the distance. You know, like climbing a mountain. And you climb the mountain spiritually, and there you are at the exalted heights with other great mountain climbers. But the ordinary people who live below are suddenly irrelevant. Or there is another direction, which is that you come down the mountain into the world, and you discover the greatest depths and profundity and closeness with the divine is exactly there in the world as it is, with its complexities and its negative issues. Now, having gone to this level, we now go to the next level. V'adsh al yedei zeh dafka, and it's through this that one comes, ba'al lebchinat v'nozlim minan levanon, to this flow from the Lebanon. And that flow from the Lebanon, he is identifying here, v'zeh shchora ni v'na'ava. That's the step where, through the exposure to the problems of life, one reaches higher. Through that, one becomes dark and comely, dark and beautiful. And it's specifically through the darkness that one becomes nava, one becomes beautiful. Elisha, and he's explaining that in terms of reaching that flow from the Lebanon, that exalted height. Elisha, kol sheyeshon shamash beguf la'avodah zu, the power the soul in the body has for this service comes from its root above. And that root above is the nozlim min levonan. And that's what one says to the daughters of Jerusalem. I am dark and comely, daughters of Jerusalem, that the power for the soul in the body, the power to sift through and transform this darkness and to become beautiful through that, is through the help which comes to the soul in the body from its source above, which is Benos Yerushalayim. Okay, so that's an interesting thing, that we have a kind of a double quality, that on the one hand there's the soul as it is above and in a kind of passive sense, and then you have the root of the soul above, which is actually actively helping to zoom, aptively helping the person in their service. Okay, let's skip the next two paragraphs is talking about this section from Chukat, which is very beautiful, but I think we have to skip that because of time. If we go up to section 7, there's an interesting thing in this section 7, Zayin, page Tzadik Chel. Ve'al pi anal yuvan ma'im haba la'geula sh'rak ha'guf halach b'galut v'lo ha'neshama. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, when he was arrested, on the 15th of Sivan in 1927. So he was taken to prison, and many negative things happened. And then came, he was sent into exile, and that was on the 3rd of Tammuz in 1927. He was sent into exile, and as he was getting onto the train to go into exile to a place called Kastroma, so he's told the people around him, you should know that only the body goes into exile, not the soul. In other words, the soul is free, whatever happens. And it's as if our oppressors, whether they are Russian communists or Nazis, Yimach Shemom, or whatever they might be, they seemingly have power over our bodies, but they do not have power over our souls. Now then comes a whole discussion about this. Surely, if the person is sent to prison or is suffering in some other way, how is he properly able to study Torah? Surely you need a relaxed mind. Don't you need a wholesome situation which is conducive to study in order to be able to study Torah and keep mitzvot properly? The person is in such a limited situation, surely that's something very negative for them. And it's a very beautiful passage, but we will have to skip through it at this moment. He speaks about the way that there is a way to see everything that happens in life, that even the most negative things are simply a part of one's service of God. And the person is not fazed by anything that happens. And even if he's, God forbid, he's in prison, or he's ill, or this, or that, or the other, somehow the person is able to see through all those different dimensions, and what he or she sees is godliness, and is in a state of menuchat hanefesh, of peace of the soul. So that idea of being in a state of peace of the soul. My son, one of my children, he tells a story. It's one of his favorite stories. There were three Hasidim, three Russian Hasidim, Chabad Hasidim. And at some point they were taken, unfortunately they were arrested by the NKVD, and they were sent to labor camps, this, that, you know, different things. And at some point they are put in a cattle truck which is taking them with other prisoners to Siberia, something like that. And it's actually Shabbat. And they know it's Shabbat. And they have their talisim with them. And they put on their talit. And they start praying. And being Chassidei Chabad, they start praying in a very deep and spiritual way, and they enter a whole kind of spiritual bonanut, where it's as if, you know, they're in another spiritual realm. And suddenly, the truck stops, and it's in a station, but it's not the kind of station that we have in a big city, where there's just the station warning you away from the townsfolk. This stop was in the middle of the marketplace. And somehow the door of the cattle truck was opened. And through the door they could see the people milling about in the marketplace on a Saturday midday, going to the market. And to them it was like a different world. And they turned back to their prayer, to their tefillah. Like, they were not enticed by this image of daily life. You know, you would think a prisoner, you know, he looks out, freedom. They were not enticed, because at this moment they were in this spiritual state. I mean, presumably if they could have escaped, you know, then maybe they would have escaped. But I think escape wasn't an option. And so if you can't escape, so at least pray with Hitbonim. And the activities of the marketplace were not fantastic. So that's what this chapter 7 is about. Reaching this kind of level of Menuchat HaNefesh, that's the last words of that chapter, that not only because of his divine soul, but even because of his animal soul. You see the last words, Ki gam mitzad nafshu ba'amid, even on account of his animal soul, hu b'matzav shel Menuchat HaNefesh, he's in a state, or she's in a state of peace of the soul. Well, that's a very exalted level. And then he goes on, Behine gam kashelo yegia ledagazu. Now, even if you haven't reached this level, alright, so, and there are all kinds of negative things, so in this situation of negativity, now, then comes a very beautiful concept, which is based on a teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov said, and this year is the 250th year of the Yod side of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov said, the place where a person wants to be,
that's where he is.
That's right. That's where he is. In other words, one can be in a negative situation, but one's focus is on something beautiful and positive. That's one's real reality. The negative situation, all right, that's over here. A person can be, it can be in all aspects of life. You know, so a person, there's the idea of hasmoda in learning. Learning with great diligence, sitting, learning pages and pages of Gemara. Sitting and learning Gemara with Rashi and Tosfos and Rishonim, the Ran, and so on, the Rosh. And very often a person doesn't have the zitzflesh. They feel, you know, there's too much going on. You know, they've already been sitting 45 minutes, an hour and a half. How long can they stay? It's possible for a person to get into a state that even if they only learn a short time, at that moment, it's as if that's all they ever do. It's as if they put their focus into that learning, and that's where they are completely. You know, even though if you were going to measure in reality, what is the person, you know, in reality, well, they're doing all kinds of different things. But that's where they want to be at that moment, and it's as if they're able to transform the reality so that that really is their reality. So the rest of this section, Chet, is about the idea that a person who can't achieve the Menuchat HaNefesh, he can't achieve the real peace, which can be in any situation whatsoever, but he's able to reach this quality of yearning for something beyond, which becomes the focus, and that is the real essence of where the person exactly is. And then in section test, we come back to the way in which the person, as a real person, is trying to serve God. There's avodah of turning away from bad and doing good. And that is like the rational dimension of giving out the land. And that's the service of each person. Third line. Sh'avodato shel kol echad hi lefi ofen chelko ba'olam. The service of each person is according to the portion of what he has in the land and the world, which has been given to him. That he has to work at it with these two lines. The two approaches, turn away from the negative and do the positive. Higher than this is the service Sha'al Pi Ruach HaKodesh. We then have a level of service which comes on the level of prophecy. And what is this? Now Ruach HaKodesh is at the quality of Malchut, of the 10th Sfira, kingship. And sometimes it's explained that Ruach HaKodesh, prophecy, is in the quality of Chochmah, of wisdom, which is the first sphere. There one gets Ruach HaKodesh, which comes to Malchut. So, And in this is included all the 10 Sfirot between Chokhmah, wisdom, and Malchut, the first Sfirah, and Malchut at the bottom, kingship at the bottom. There are all the 10 Sfirot, and that's the idea of Ruach HaKodesh, which includes all the different dimensions which are in between, from wisdom, from Chokhmah, down to Malchut of the soul. That's page 101. Kufala. So that's Ruach HaKodesh, which is this whole spiritual dimension of the person. And then we come to the higher level, Avodah DeGoral, the service of drawing lots, which is beyond reason, and this has also got two levels. And one is Emunah, faith, and the second is Bitul, selflessness, which is higher than intellect. And these two aspects, they're also at two ends. That the idea of faith is basically in the sphere of Malchut, which is the lowest level. And Bitul, selflessness, which is above reason, is because of the essence of the soul, which is higher than intellect. And so through Emunah, through faith, or Bitul, or selflessness, there is no doubt, in fact, about which way he's being led. And it's very clear that he's being led to everything good, to the wholeness of good, until he comes to such a quality which is called Olamcha Tireh B'Chayecha, that even when you're alive, you receive the reward of the world to come, and that's apparent to you even while you're still in this world. That, and then that's revealed to the person, Ach B'Goral Yechelek Es Haaretz, that this drawing lots for dividing up the Holy Land, that's revealed to the person in his own lifetime or her own lifetime, as a neshama in a body, as a soul in a body. And so then it's in the last chapter, it speaks about how when we went into the land of Israel, so there was this time of peace. And ultimately that is what there is supposed to be. Ultimate peace, ish tachat einato, tachat gafno, each person under their vine and under their fig tree. And that's the quality of, that's what we started with and that's what we will end with. And in between, there's exile. And that exile is the exile in order to get from the fountain of the gardens to get to a higher level, the well of living water. That's going through exile. That's like the earth which covers the water. And in order to reveal the living water below, you have to dig away the earth. And so we, the Jewish people, are in that exile. But ultimately we come to that higher level where we have the lots, the drawing of lots, which is that quality which is absolutely from the beyond. And through that ultimately is revealed Mashiach Tzidkenu, where the Jewish people are gathered together, showing the great preciousness of the divine hashkacha, the divine supervision of every single man and woman of the Jewish people. And he will lead us to our land, the Korof Mamash, with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu.
Thank you.